You feel any better?
Oh, yeah. Much better.
You sure? You look a lot better.
Yeah, I'm much more like myself again.
What do you, yeah. Well.
Just take you out.
Stay a little while. I was thinking about actually, you know, because as a result of that illness, his age, 10 years, I don't look at her face.
Yeah.
Goddamn, this thing happened. I don't know what it was.
She did something.
What happened? I guess some physical takes a lot of trauma, something like that. A little bit of shock, but I think you're, you got it there. I had, you had raised the point, I got to thinking about it. I, first of all, I feel very strongly that it's extremely unsound for us to make any decision like that on the basis of screwing the press or, you know, keeping them hung up or something like that. As, you know, we were talking about not going because we have to fix, you know, cut off right now. That, what you say here, what we say the plans are.
Right.
I've done this before, but we got to clearly go over this.
Right now, do what we say, no question.
Okay. Whether to go to the game or not, I thought it was a good idea. The more I thought about it, this got me thinking, but the more I don't think it's a good idea.
Good.
I just, it's a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
It's, you get into all the hang-up of the Page Belcher and the other congressmen and all the political mishmash.
It's a lot of work out for me.
It's a no fun for you.
No fun at all.
And what do you need from it? So you get on this thing
for an audience and I'll get a nice hand.
TV footage, you get a hell of a reception. But that lasts for a couple seconds.
Right.
And there you are. And it,
and
it isn't all that good a thing. I thought it was.
Everybody knows I like football.
That's right. You don't need to
I'm a football man that's ever been in the White House and they're trying to knock it. That doesn't bother me that they try to knock it. I think that's good at advertising.
That's no problem. And I wouldn't avoid it if it were good otherwise. I wouldn't avoid it because of that. But I don't think you add anything because of it except for some work. And there's something on the negative side in the
all these problems.
Well, the Thanksgiving is a family day sort of thing. Admittedly, you aren't going to be with your family, but somehow it's a day you ought to. While a lot of people do go to the football game, most people stay home and watch it on television and have a big Thanksgiving dinner with their family. And I just somehow think maybe you ought to do the same thing.
Our family's going to be gone.
I know, but I mean, with your wife, you know, at your home in California or your house here, if you want to eat here and then go.
No, I don't think we should stay here. I believe this is an awfully good time for me to get an extra day in California, too, to get adjusted to the time in case I decide to do the press conference. Right. I said, I will not decide your judgment there very until Saturday.
Right.
You know, we've got plenty of time to meet.
I'd go out Wednesday then.
Why don't we go out Wednesday? What time?
About 4.
Might as well. Might have had dinner out there even.
No, you know. You want to, or are you on the plane? You're on the plane.
When is the Congress going to be at that point?
Well, the House is gone.
What about the Senate? What are you getting the hell out of here?
Nobody knows what the Senate's doing. They'll leave Wednesday.
I wonder, let me say this, just in terms of symbolism, though, if I should stay here until the Senate gets the hell out of town.
I think you should.
But my point is, if they're going to be in, you think they'll be in late Wednesday night?
If they are, I think you ought to say.
That's right. I think I've got to be here.
Even if they can go out Thursday morning, if you have to.
Go to hell on Thursday morning. Go out late at night. Be on the plane. Suppose it's at 9 o'clock.
Get in at 11 their time.
That's right.
Okay. But it's 2 in the morning here.
Better to get it. Bob, you got a good rest out there.
Let's find out what the Senate's going
to do. I don't think you can.
We may.
Jazz part now.
Wednesday afternoon. You think they will? You don't think they're going to Wednesday night? So you think they'll go through?
Because he likes the medical. be a, say, a shocking thing what they're doing. Put the burr under their saddle, like nobody's business. Sure, the small leadership deal and the rest. Now, that's my, I'm saying, I'm just running this by you. I'm not sure you would support the others, but you've got to deal with those things.
Oh, that's fine.
No.
Living,
it's like the same thing, like the pay board thing. We ought to, yeah. we ought to ask press, but it's questions that we can't live with them, but we also may not be able to live without them, so therefore we have a line. And I understand that, so what's the pressure?
My point, Mr. President, I pressed a little too quickly. There are some things we need from them before they adjourn the first session at some time in December.
Like?
We need the tax bill in the hopefully in a form where you can approve it that carries out your principal objective. Second, although there's some disagreement about it, I think we need the Economic Stabilization Act extension, even though we may not like the form in which we get it.
We
may not want to use it.
We
need your two Supreme Court judges confirmed. I don't think there's any doubt.
They've got to do that.
Obviously, no matter what we say to them at Thanksgiving, they will later confirm both Rehnquist and Hall.
So that doesn't bother, so we can raise hell with them about that, and then when we get it, then they've got it.
That's right.
So
we do need...
Just taking them on, but I mean, they're not going to do it?
Not necessarily. The partisan feeling is running pretty high already as a result of the campaign checkoff debate. You're not
lost any Republicans on that.
Not a single one. And Bill Saxby came back from London yesterday to be here on hand for the vote today. So we're going to have 44 strong, and I've got Hugh Scott visiting with Carl Monk to get his proxy because we may need that to get a live survey with them.
Nobody's ever given a live survey yet. Goddamn, Carl, it's too bad.
Well. The foreign assistance legislation, Mr. President, is another item that we need. As I indicated to you on the phone, Bill Maillard stopped in here after their Friday meeting, and Bill says it's very tough to even imagine how we can get agreement with Fulbright saying, you know, gotta have this. But as we talked, Al Haig, Johnny Layman, Bill Maillard, and I Friday evening, well, that's why we were a little late coming out to say hello to you when you came back, if we were working on that problem. But as we talked, Bill Maillard said, well, now maybe we can get agreement. So that's another item. And incidentally, they would be working this week, except Doc Morgan said, to hell with it, I've got plans in Pennsylvania, I'm not going to be here. So they're going to resume their work on Monday the 29th, and I think we need that. I would suggest, Mr. President, to orchestrate...
Quietly make this in a rather lower key,
yes,
lower key session, saying here's the list of the must legislation that we must have before the end of the year.
That's right.
Let's get that. But let's not leave out goddamn. We ought to have something in the way of revenue sharing. Of course, we got the goddamn welfare reform in there. They'll never get that, so we don't worry too much about that. Let me ask you this, Clark. What is your view in the event the campaign legislation? The campaign thing is in there. I got the impression
that Bob knows.
You've already got a great speech up to veto the bill.
Yes, I would.
The reason you veto the bill is it advertised on two. Perhaps the same reason I will even consider it. I'm not sure. But the reason I might have to consider it, even though the torpedo or economic plan for a moment, is that this is, as I told Conrad last night in the poem, somewhat like writing the Constitution, the form of government, and all the rest, and if we simply can't think, is it like those people that got me to sign that goddamn 18-year-old vote thing that was the right thing to do, wrong thing to do because of the wrong time, the wrong way, I shouldn't have signed it. It should have been done the Constitution. That's my view now. But I took it because there are made a terribly strong case for the current president. It's their responsibility to this. If we didn't do that, we'd look as if I proposed voting rights for the Negroes in the South. So we could have bought something good. at a terrible cost. Now here we've got a problem, it seems to me, where what is the good? Well, the investment tax credit is good. Auto production credit is good. As far as the latter is concerned, there's one thing you can be damn sure, they'll eventually get a tax bill down here, I can sign it, we'll review that auto production tax credit, because that seems to be an asset. Investment tax credit is not. They also, because they have some of their liquidity, right? But this thing, while it is the cost of it, you know, the trading rate and all that sort of thing, it isn't the cost, this is very big. But this thing fundamentally changes American politics in this country. In the way, and that's my argument. And that's what I've sold to Congress here. Congress will sort of say, well, is it one benefit of this? I talked on Saturday, is that did you realize that at least it will mean the Democratic Party will become more responsible because it will be less indebted to labor and less dependent upon it. He's absolutely right.
Not true at all.
His point is, Charlie, his point is that in the event that this passes, the Democratic Party in the final campaign candidate does not have to go to the labor leaders hat in hand for their support.
Sure he does. He has to go to them, and he will, and they'll provide it hat in hand for their support above, let's say they get $20 million for each candidate. So you get, so the Republican gets $20 million, the Democrat gets $20 million. So they
receive more now.
Now, how do you spend more? Because that's what you're going to go for. And they're also, in a way, it makes labor even more important because labor's importance on work is, and you know, the organization stuff.
What are your arguments, Clark? You've been thinking and talking about this thing. Why is that?
Well, Clark has a great follow-up to it, which is, Clark, back, because that sort of modifies the question and the other things.
I was referring to the fact, Mr. President, this morning that I made a speech. I was accused of making your speech vetoing the bill and calling the Congress back into session if necessary on Christmas Eve to repass the tax bill, which says you're on television talking to the American people. You have proposed to save them money on their taxes in these various areas and to stimulate job-producing business activity to deal with the unemployment problem, to save them money and so on. And instead of that, the Congress has given you a bill which takes your money and makes this a politician's dream, puts it into their slush fund.
Yeah.
And you are knocking that out by your veto and calling the Congress back to pass the tax proposals to save them the money that you had originally recommended. Well, I got worked up this morning and several people asked about it. But to answer the question,
but everybody was very much intrigued. Everybody was concerned about veto until we got to the point of veto and call Congress back and demand the tax bill immediately.
In the form in which it...
Which you also think you get.
Oh, yes. I do. There are lots of goodies in this tax bill and every candidate for
house. You can pick up the things that the House has added to it, claim those as our own.
Sure.
House and Senate.
Say the Ways and Means Committee did this, House did this, Finance Committee and the Senate acted responsibly, which isn't quite true.
And the automobile excise tax and the investment tax credit or job involvement credit means the half-million jobs and their shopping list.
I'd like to be responsive to your question, Mr. President, because I haven't articulated this yet as well as I could, and I've got to work on it. Every candidate who's run for public office, been elected, served in public office, whether it be the presidency, whether it be Senate, House of Representatives, knows that there is a popular check on the abuse of power that comes in two ways. One, it comes in the political process, where somebody writes and says, I worked for you, I rang doorbells for you.
Right.
I contributed $25 to your campaign.
Right.
I don't like what you have done. I'm not going to contribute $25 to your next campaign unless you satisfy me. And so you eliminate all of that from at least the way the bill is written now, the presidency. I would maintain it's going to be extended in time to Senate and House. So you have eliminated the popular check that is important to the preservation of individual freedom in the fact that a candidate needs those $25, $10, and he has got to demonstrate by his performance in office.
How often have you and I gone to those interminable sessions with those pastors who give money, and the good people who give money, and try to sell them? But until you could demonstrate that, you couldn't be nominated. Now, the other part of this, which of course is we can't make as strong politically, is that if individuals are not forced to go out to raise their money, then it means that the level of your candidates will go down without any question, because the people that give money are intelligent. And so the level of your candidates, you'll have commanders, jerks, horse thieves, and so forth, kids, totally irresponsible people. If they're going to kick it, it'll be sent to the House and Senate. Here goes here. Well, what the heck? That a person doesn't need money. You see, what it means, basically, that the producers of wealth in this country, the producers of jobs in this country, that their influence on the selective process is enormously reduced. You see, so that's not good. And that's they're using the other. Oh, of course it is. I know it. Of course they know. They want this to be a democracy. They want this to be, let's let the people decide. So the people, you know that all the time, the people are going to,
wow. You also get the enormously potent argument that this doesn't eliminate that. In fact, eliminate the bad guys buying candidates, it makes it even worse. Because now they pour it into the primary.
Right, that's right. All of them.
Whereas the selection process, in other words, they control the selection process of the candidate now rather than the election process. And that's even worse. Because then, now you know, you don't have to worry about the money for the final campaign, so you pour everything into the primary.
It means the man of wealth will control the nominees and limit what the people will get.
That's right.
They can concentrate their fire on the primaries, not on the election. Another point. Go ahead with your other arguments.
That's the one that's got to be developed and articulated, and as Bob pointed out to me this morning, I hadn't seen it, but I read it now, the Tom Wicker piece. We never thought we'd be embracing anything Tom Wicker wrote, but he has begun to develop this point of view that the individual citizen loses his right to control the decisions of his own government if you take away from him the privilege of contributing to candidates, because that gives him a check on the abuse of power. Because a president or a senator or congressman looking to re-election has got to satisfy those people who are willing to contribute to this campaign.
Well, then you raise the big bugaboo of federal control, too. As soon as the federal government finances a campaign, then inevitably it must control the campaign. It won't have to start this aside. Of the $20 million we give you, you can only spend so much here and so much there. And you must spend some of it, you know, in black media because the blacks are downtrodden. And all that kind of stuff. You know? They're in the till, right?
The comptroller.
They're also right.
Yeah, the comptroller general's testimony and a letter that he used that he wrote following up his testimony 5 years ago, indicating the evils of the system and the power that it would give to the comptroller general to write rules and regulations, Bob, along the lines that you indicated, was brought out in a debate Friday evening. That was a pretty good debate. Marlo Cook, Peter Dominick, and a few others.
We got people like Marlo supporting us on this.
Oh, you've got their tigers. It's not a question of trying to run them up. Peter Dominick.
That's something that gets about our side.
Oh, boy, they...
When you got across, it seems to me, very effectively, and this is the best way to do it anyway, rather than the president indicating I will veto something, which is really an experiment. But the way you handle that was very slow, where you said that your view that you probably will. That's good.
Well, I hope I didn't push too hard, Mr. President.
You did exactly right. See, you're saying it doesn't bother me. You're saying it. By gosh, you think you might, or that's fine. Or Scott said, I don't know, or you could say this. Another thing that the leaders can always do, you can say that you're going to recommend the veto. Now, you see, that puts a very, very great I know damn well you're not going to say it if you haven't discussed it. Now, are they all satisfied down there that there's enough of the veto talk going around?
I think so, and of course they're looking forward to John Conway's. Is 11:30 plus something? I think it's 11:30 this morning, and I've asked Treasury to give us immediately copies of what John says on this so that we can use them in the Senate.
Secretary Conway, please.
President, on a slightly somewhat related point, I was in Illinois Saturday night at Lake County fundraising dinner.
Lake County.
Darn good one. But I was amazed, Mr. President, I indicated Bob this morning, after a McClary dinner, an Ogilvy dinner, a Percy dinner, and the salute to the President dinner a week ago Tuesday, they still turned out over 600 people at a county fundraising dinner in Lake County. Of course, that's a great county with Lake Forest and Highland Park and Highwood. But more importantly,
just wanted to tell you good luck where you went on. And at the time you got on the campaign fund that we discussed last night, I frankly, just to listen to working on this morning, I finally understood it. I just think we've got to hold that veto trick right over our heads. So that's where I want you to know that in case it comes up. And if it does, and I want you to say that you discussed it with the president or whatever, how do you feel you should handle it? Yeah, right? Yeah. And that if it's seriously, that you feel that under the circumstances that it would make necessary to use. Now, here's the strategy that I have in mind. If we veto, for your information, what we will do is that I will veto and then call the Congress back to the special session before Christmas, and I'll keep it as it's your right to until they pass the pact that has the tax on the seat. Because everybody knows that we now that's the way to play this game. If they're going to play this, we'll let Harry Truman on. See my point? So we're not without tools. But I think you should take very time. Well, I don't know, I know that as I am going to like to keep going, but I just wish you all the advice on me watching. You go on 11:30. Okay, so. I know about Tom, there are arguments. Go ahead. Thank you, Tom.
Barbara and I stayed overnight with Bob Stewart, the, as you know, the National Committee.
He's the nicest man.
And he had a very...
Oh, was his father there too?
Yes.
The old man.
Oh, his father? Yeah. Yeah, quite good.
And the old man, the greatest leader in the world.
He really is. He's just the greatest. They came over. Mr. Stewart Sr. came over and had late breakfast with us yesterday morning. And it was a late breakfast because Bob went, got up early and drove into Clint Stone's apartment and had breakfast with Clint Stone at 8:15 yesterday morning.
They have to live with their choice.
Some died for theirs, but a few hundred have to live if that were there. Attorney General.
It had to do about winning the war, and because they only freed the slaves in the South. You know what I mean? It had what hell of a he freed them in the South, but not in the North, not in the border states. Only the political science. The other reason the draft out the other day, or two, and the draft out for Shah Tani, and when he provided the MC, he provided it as a war major in 1963 for people that fought on the side of the Civil War. From the South said they could come over and get the amnesty. Who wouldn't? He offered that to the North Vietnamese. And then, of course, this is in 1965, the last November. Congress passes a little act saying that anybody who is a deterrent loses his citizenship. So Lincoln said, and he followed that with a very promptly. This is very much 1965. The word was in. He says, anybody that returns to return in 60 days will be pardoned. Of course, we'll do that. See, there wasn't a bit of the whole business about pardoning the bullshit. He played it very slowly. We're going to play it the same way. It's got to be hard to pardon. You've got to be hard with this sort of thing. I mean, an individual race is common, but in terms of principle, you cannot compromise these things. You agree?
Absolutely.
And all this thing and this election thing.
That's a matter of principle.
I think it's a matter of principle. It can change this whole country. And I'm not going to, I just, it may jeopardize our program. It may jeopardize our election plans. So be it. We're not going to take something terribly bad in order to get something which is marginally good. Because it may be only marginally good. Who knows what will help the economy? Who really knows? See what I mean?
Yes, Mr. President, also you're showing leadership, and whether people agree with you or disagree with you around the country every time, and I'm not telling you anything you don't know better than I do, that you take hold of something and chart a course and make decisions you gain, even though people say, I don't know if I agree, but my gosh, we got a president who's willing to act and willing to try and do something about the problem.
Well, we'll follow that. You always have to be sure to tell I have been talking to the commissioner.
I noticed that
call. This is for
good, thank you.
The farm thing, gold hands. Second, I want you to go bus a whole bunch down there and line for the bus all the way. If they turn it down, we get somebody else.
I was fearful that he would be shattered by Jack Miller thing last night, so I called Earl Lake just before he went to bed telling him that.
Press, I was back on with people.
I know.
Well, the hell, that's what cars all need to worry about. I did probably well advised to predict the drop in and the cars all ran out too, but we didn't. We couldn't know it. We'd buy it, and then we'd put somebody else in. We'd get a man.
You'll be pleased about this. The last thing Earl Butt said to me last night was, as long as the president's for me, he said, I'm going to fight. And he said, Clark, I'm no quitter. And I said, I know you're not, and the president's for you, Earl. He said, that's all I need to know.
When he gets in, we got to fight. That bus, after he gets in, has got to do some things to help the farmers. We got to get away. Here's where I'm on your side, not on the side of basically our whole farm group. And I know that it's all the establishment down there. It's hard to do. It's what Quakers do. It's Harlow's. But they're wrong. That's the thing. We cannot let this farm antagonist stay in too long.
That's right.